And apparently Craig is ready too.
All my responses tonight will be generated by ChatGPT.
No, that was last week. That was last
week. Nope, it replaced me. It took over.
We got out of the basement. We're not locked up anymore. We're able to do what we want to do. Now we can record a podcast. Actually, us. Not ChatGPT doing it. Not some other AI doing it. That's still going to take a few years. Probably. Although I've seen some quote unquote deep fakes out there that are kind of terrifying. One of them where the guy's like, "I am not Morgan Freeman," but it's in Morgan Freeman's voice using Morgan Freeman's face. Looked just like him. Sounded just like him. It's kind of horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
What? You're the one who brought up ChatGPT. I didn't.
I don't have access to your physical environment and cannot determine whether or not you're locked in a basement. However, if you feel unsafe or in danger, I would recommend that you reach out to emergency services or a trusted friend or family member for help.
Is this what this is going to be like all night? Are we actually going to do a podcast, or are you just going to sit there and read ChatGPT responses? And don't you dare read a GPT response to me.
As an AI language model, I am not capable of representing a podcast in the traditional sense, but I can provide information and answer questions that can be used as content for a podcast. If you have a specific topic in mind, feel free to ask me questions, and I'll do my best to provide informative and helpful answers. You still there, Grumpy Dungeon Master Jay?
I don't know. Are we actually going to do this podcast, or are you just going to read responses?
As an AI... Whatever. I'm Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher. Let's start. Actually, overall, D&D can be fun and rewarding experience and offers numerous benefits.
Oh,
however, like a hobby or activity, it may not be for everyone.
That's it. So, you're off the podcast. I'm replacing you.
With what? Chat yeah, DM?
Yeah, pretty much. I'll go find somebody who can just read ChatGPT responses to me.
You already found them. It's me.
That's fair.
What are you looking for? It's me. So, did you play any D&D this week?
No. No, we didn't.
Neither
not.
Did I.
Yes. I noticed.
My wife was sick.
Yep. When, as always, there's scheduling conflicts on my side. Now we're at a point where we're gaming maybe every 2 weeks.
That's sad.
Yeah. Going from once a week very, very consistently to once a month to now back to about once every 2 weeks. I think what I need to do, aside from running the standard games and stuff, I need to find another group that I can just play some D&D with.
Yeah. I would suggest it. Playing is a lot of fun if you're a nerd.
Hey.
You could play test D and done.
Yeah, that's never going to happen. Unlike you, I am not a full-time DM. And yeah, I actually do get to play.
Hmm.
When was the last time you actually played?
A little bit ago. Mike DM'd us through Phandelver.
Yeah, you get a couple of games a year, I think.
Yeah, I get a good amount. I don't get to play like Adventures League or anything, but...
Yeah.
That is what it is.
So speaking of D and Dunn, do we want to go over the new playtest?
Not yet.
Not yet?
So I was at the game store, and I was... just chatting up about the Grumpy Dungeon Master anniversary, trying to get that on the store schedule so I could get room and space for everything. And there were people there. They were talking about Warhammer and whatnot, and they were kind of bouncing around, like trying to learn more about Warhammer. Mm-hmm. And I overheard them say that they played D&D. So I grabbed a couple of business cards and I went over to talk to one of the people when they weren't busy. The wife was the one I talked to because she wasn't interested in Warhammer. And so I basically introduced myself, what I do and everything, and, you know, the stuff that I run for the store and, you know, the podcast and all that. And, she goes, yeah, I run my own D&D game. Yeah, I run it as homebrew. I hate the magic system in D&D. So I completely revamped that. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. What did you revamp it to? Mana potions. And I was like, what? She's like, yeah, they have to buy mana potions to cast spells.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, that's cool. Like, so did they cast a lot of spells? Are they expensive? I was like, no, they're hard to find. They're very expensive. So it's mostly just physical combat in my game.
Okay. So it's a low magic campaign.
I'm like, okay, that's cool. And then I told her about the Vance system and how, like, I kind of never liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And all the games that have always used it. I don't mind it. It's okay. But I don't know. Like, D&D, like, every single class uses the Jack Vance magic system in one way, shape, or form. And there's no difference between the two.
Yeah.
Like, a sorcerer and the warlock, they still use it, but it's they do get their kind of, like, influence onto the system. I'm really thinking, like, there just needs to be different magic systems in D&D that people can use.
Kind of used to be. I know Psionics, at least with second edition, was its own thing. Because it was actually a point system. I don't know what terminology they would use for it, but you had to spend a certain number of points to do a certain number of things.
Similar to the sorcerer points, but just for casting all your spells, and you had a small pool of them each day. That's the way that worked in 4th edition with the Scion.
Yeah, when you run out of points, sucks to be you.
I mean, I'm just so tired of everything in D&D being a spell instead of like an ability.
Mm-hmm.
And just this, okay, these are the spells you put in your head a day. And like, no one like brings in the fact that that they have to sit there with their book and read the spells and get them put into their brain. Unless you're a sorcerer and then you just get them, or the warlock. But they still use that system on the back end, which is just like the annoying part from it.
Well, it did not used to be that bad. You're absolutely right with 5th edition. And 5th edition, a lot of it is that way. But there are abilities that aren't. 6th edition seems to be even pushing further in that direction where everything you get is just they might call it an ability or something, but it's just a goddamn spell. It's the equivalent of a spell. It does the same thing that spells would do.
Yeah. Even one thing I noticed in the new rules, and I'm not jumping fully into this yet, but I was looking at the changes for like hide. So they took away hidden as a condition.
Okay, I didn't even see that.
Yeah, so they took away hidden as a condition in D&D. And so what happens now is, and I'll go ahead and read this off here. Hide is an action. So when you take the hide action, you try to conceal yourself. To do so stealthily, you must succeed a DC 15 dexterity stealth check while you are heavily obscured or behind three-quarters cover or total cover. And you must be out of any visible enemy's line of sight. If you can see the creature, you can discern whether or not it can see you. Okay, there's a couple issues there. I'll get back to that. On a successful check, you have the invisible condition, making note of your check's total, which becomes a DC for a creature to find you with a wisdom perception check. The condition ends immediately on you. After any of the following occurrences, you make a sound louder than a whisper, an enemy finds you, you make an attack roll, or you cast a spell with a verbal component. Okay?
Yep.
So, them making the hide action like a stealth, like a value that you have to pass is weak, in my opinion. Like, I get how it is now, where like I take the hide action and I roll my stealth check and it's a 19, and then the DM has to compare that to all the passive perceptions of all the monsters, and it could be very difficult and time consuming, depending on the amount of monsters or the creatures and blah 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 blah. So like turning it into like a DC check that you have to pass or fail is understandable. I don't see a problem the way it currently is.
It's kind of always been that way. It's just you weren't necessarily making you would do your standard. You would basically create your DC by rolling, And then anything trying to find you had to tie or beat that DC.
Yeah. But you still need to make note of the DC because of the invisible condition.
Yeah.
So the invisible condition, going down here to read that. While invisible, you experience the following effects. You're concealed, which is you aren't affected by any effect that requires you to be seen. You have surprise. If you are invisible when you roll initiative, you have advantage on the roll. And attacks affected. The attack roll against you have disadvantage. Attack rolls against you have disadvantage, and your attack roll have advantage. If a creature can somehow see you, with magic or blind sight, you don't get this benefit against that creature. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So here's where my confusion kind of comes in, and I don't understand this. So if you go back up to hidden, it says you have to be heavily obscured or behind three quarters cover or total cover, and you must be out of any visible enemy's line of sight. Okay?
Okay.
So imagine this scenario. Okay? You're on the castle walls. Okay? So you have those like archer stones that you can hide behind, giving you total cover.
Yep.
Okay? And there's an enemy giant on the other side of the wall, a bit further away, throwing shit at you. Okay? So you hide behind the archer cover, you take the hide action, you become invisible, and basically you pop out, you get an advantage on your attack against the giant, because he can't see you, right?
Right.
All right. So what happens when on the flagpole that's hanging on off the side of the rampart, okay, up atop sits an invisible imp, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, you can't see him, but he can see you, okay?
Yep.
So he's not a visible enemy to have line of sight on you, okay? But according to the invisible condition, all right, let me get back to that. If a creature somehow sees you, as with magic or blind sight, you don't gain this benefit against that creature. So do you turn invisible or not? Like, and then is this invisible, like, are you actually turning invisible? Can the imp no longer see you? Like, you're that invisible? Because he doesn't have...
Well, like, ignoring the imp, even taking that out of this equation, the moment you stand back up, that giant can see you. So you're not...
Right, but you still get advantage on the attack roll.
Yeah, even though he could see you, and it says you don't get these benefits if the enemy could see you, correct?
Right. Oh, yeah. I've always given it to the player.
Yeah, like, but the wording, they're getting too... Man... I am so of two minds on this thing.
And, yeah.
And I've had discussions on here a number of times. I actually like hard rules. I do. But I think I like them specifically for board games and less for tabletop games. This is a tabletop game. This is an RPG. And they are setting, they're actually following in the footsteps of Pathfinder. Like 5e had a lot of shit set in stone, but there was still some vagary to it. And I know I've bitched about invisibility enough because it was incredibly kind of vague. And I was real happy when I read how Pathfinder was doing it. But now WotC is kind of following in the same footsteps, making invisible a condition, giving you kind of exact parameters to spot invisible. And now as I'm thinking more on this, I'm just not so sure I like that.
Yeah.
It's turning it a little more in the direction of fourth edition, which I don't want to play a board game. Like, I don't. I'm playing tabletop games for the role play aspects. Give me some solid rules, but kind of generalized, and let me figure it out. That's what I'm looking for.
Well, I know for a fact, and I can't say how I know this for a fact, but they are so anti anything that came from fourth edition that just you saying that this makes it feel like fourth edition would probably get them would give them enough ammo to basically abandon 6th edition altogether.
Yeah.
Like they hate 4th edition with a passion. Like, and it's kind of sad.
Make 2 games. Make one that's all rules and make one that's low rules.
I mean, that's what I said a long time ago, is that there doesn't need to be a new edition. We just need an advanced 5e.
Yeah, like adding statuses for everything. I noticed a new status they added is called dying. Like, why do I need a status for that? Yeah, I already understand how dying works. It's all in the rules. You don't need to create it as a status.
Yeah, and then when you read what the condition, so dying's now a condition.
Yeah.
But then when you read what the dying condition does, it's exactly what dying currently does in 5th edition.
Yep.
Okay, so going back on the an idea of making a different gaming system, did you see that the Kobold Press's Project Black Flag had a not welcome response to its release?
No, I didn't.
And its feedback?
I've been getting the updates from them, but I haven't been following it. So what happened?
So they released like their version of their rules that they want. And everyone complained that it was too similar to 5th edition to ever have one, what for anyone to ever like hop over and join that game. So what they said in response was that they wanted to basically make another edition of 5th edition that was similar enough that people could have a choice between the two to kind of end the D&D monopoly. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of people have theorized was what that actually meant was, hey, we have so much 5th edition product that if we were make our own edition that wouldn't be able to use that product, then no one would buy our product anymore.
Oh, that's Which possible.
It kind of makes sense. I'm not saying that is the reason, but a lot of people are making a lot of their own RPGs right now. Yes. Even MCDM announced a couple of days ago that they're making their own role-playing game system, and that they're focusing more on the tactical board game aspects of the game and not like the exploration or anything like that at all.
Okay.
And everyone is just making their own game system. And like, even I'm like, okay, if I were to make a game system, what would I actually do? What would I want to focus on as like core gaming components for the game and like what I want each thing to do?
Do I go very
rules heavy or do I go rules light? And I'm always like, more rules are better, but then I don't want it to be too time consuming to understand and learn things.
Yeah, we knew this was coming because of the OGL nonsense. Like, everybody jumped ship from 5e because of that.
Yeah.
Now that.
And no one's going back at all. No.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, nobody in my playgroup wants to do 5e. We just have no interest in it. But I primarily just deal with my playgroup and what I see in the DM resources groups. So it's kind of hard to really say if anybody's actually going back or not. I think there's the portion of people who were very, very out, and then there's a large portion of people who just never left and weren't planning to leave. But yeah, like everybody creating their own rules systems, I like that idea. Kobold Press, like all of their stuff has been 5e. So I don't know that this Black Flag thing is the way to go. Sure as hell not releasing it this early. They probably need to do their whole thing from scratch, give it a year or two, and put together their own thing. Because if you're just trying to make a quote-unquote variant 5e system, that's not going to work. Like, you need a new system if you're going to try to do your own thing.
You can definitely create your own RPG system on any concept or theme that you prefer. And many tabletop RPG systems have been created by individuals and small groups over the years.
Oh yeah, there's thousands of them out there.
And there are many resources available to help you create your own system. To create your own RPG system, you may want to start by defining the basic mechanics of the game, such as character creation, combat, and skill checks. You can then build upon these mechanics by adding unique features and abilities that fit with the theme of your game.
Are you reading a chat GPT right now?
No.
Are you? Yeah, you are.
It had you at first, though.
No, I just let you keep rambling for a minute. I was like, man, he's just reading something. Probably chat GPT again.
No, so I'm like, there are already so many systems out there. And what I loved about D&D was that it was the unifier, and now there are even more, and even more coming out. Like, I don't have enough time to sit down there and playtest D&Done, playtest MCDM's thing, playtest Project Black Flag, playtest Pathfinder 3 or whatever it's going to be.
No, that two just came out. Like, they're not doing anything different there anytime soon.
Like, honestly, like, going to Pathfinder right now probably is the best bet, because that's going to be the system that's going to be solid for a while.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to have to reinvent the wheel. The wheel's already there. They've already play tested it. They've already worked it out. The system works. There's a lot of content. So just jump aboard that and just have fun. I don't know. I'm just.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, you're not wrong. Like, it can be overwhelming, but this isn't new. I personally have run a dozen different systems or more. I personally have played 24 different systems or more. And there are hundreds that I've never seen or even heard of that exist.
So when it comes to those 24 different systems that you've played, how many of them felt like playing D&D?
D&D, honestly. Most of them are very different. Like Pathfinder would feel like playing D&D. I've never played Pathfinder, but it would be just like Dungeons and Dragons, because it's based off the same system. The core rules are still the same. As far as what I have run over the years, and I'm gonna forget some, I have no doubt. But I've run Rifts, I've run Boot Hill, I have run Shadowrun, Call of Cthulhu, White Wolf system. I would say Street Fighter, but that's also White Wolf. Jeez, what else? There's some other ones I'm forgetting in there for sure.
And all of those felt completely unique from a D&D term.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. None of them are the same system. They're not Marvel superheroes from the 90s. Like, none of them are even remotely the same. Boot Hill is 100% percentile. Call of Cthulhu is percentile. Marvel superheroes was percentile dice. Shadowrun is nothing but D6s. Rifts, it's been a long time. I think it was kind of similar in the D20s, as well as it used the whole gamut of dice, but the system and the settings were still very, very different. It had a lot of charts for what your roles do when you actually do things.
Yeah. I don't know. I watched the video about them with the new playtest, and we'll get to talking about it here soon. And I mean, I feel like they're trying their best. The D&D design team is trying their best to make this edition unique and stand out, be different than 5e, but still feel like 5e.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I see about it, the more I'm just like, why not just update 5th edition with these changes and just be done with it? Like, why are you reinventing dying? Why are you reinventing actions and the D20 test and all that stuff?
Obviously, like, they're not. They're just renaming stuff.
That's correct. It feels like they're just renaming things and nothing is changing.
They are changing a lot in the classes, and it's not for the best a lot of the time, as we're going to talk about here in the Druid. They are straight up just streamlining things. The Druid, from reading this new version of it, it's just a goddamn cleric.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's a cleric.
It's a nature cleric.
Yep. Since we're on it, let's go ahead and talk about it. Yeah. Yep. So at first level, you get an ability called Channel Nature.
Well, hold on, before you even get to there.
Oh,
What is a druid? What class group is it in?
It falls under the priest class group, which is fine because it always has.
And that makes it a
Priest
cleric.
makes it a cleric. Well, no, even in second edition, there was the priest like type, and they had clerics and druids like that. But the two classes still felt very different in that edition. Yeah. In this one, you get first level channel nature. And what does channel nature do? It basically does the same thing as like channel divinity.
The mechanics are exactly the same as channel divinity. It's something you can do a certain amount of times per long rest. They changed the amount of times that you could do it. Instead of tying it to proficiency bonus, they tied it to what was it, class level?
It's half your class level, I think, or something.
You regain. You can use it twice. You regain one expended use when you finish a short rest. All in a long rest, you get additional uses when you reach certain druid levels, as shown in the druid table. And basically, it's first through fourth, you get two. Fifth through eighth, you get three. And then from there on out, 9 to 20, you get four. They did this because, I guess, the cleric can't be multi-class, but the druid can?
I don't know about that. I think everybody can be multi-class.
Well, that's what part of their design note was, is because maybe to try and say that it's because you can multi-class with them, they changed it to this because they thought proficiency bonus, as you grow, taking one level in cleric, you could just now use your channel divinity more and more and more. So I kind of sit back and say, okay, well, why not? You as a person are getting stronger and stronger and stronger. Thus, you can channel more and more and more energy. Yeah, you got that one level in druid, one level in cleric, and limiting it there just to that level, just to that one, is kind of useless. Now I'm not going to multi-class at all and get that little spice of flair. Yeah. You know, it's already weak enough as it is. Let me use it more. Yep. Who cares if I can turn into a bat, you know, 9 times? Or, well, actually, I guess 4 times, you know, at level 20 with one level in druid. I'm a level 20 character. I should be able to.
Yeah, I can't argue. Now, that doesn't necessarily affect the shape-changing thing, wild shaping.
It does, because that is, your channel nature is your wild shape.
Is it?
Yes.
Okay, well, yeah, but on top of that, They've added other things that you could do with channel nature that make it feel like a cleric. I mean, the quote
later
unquote,
on.
Yeah, at second level, you get nature's aid, which as a quote magic action. Here we are with titling everything. You can channel healing energy that appears as blooming flowers. Choose a point within 30 feet of yourself, and spectral flowers appear for a moment in a 10-foot radius sphere centered on that point. Then roll a number of d4s equal to your wisdom modifier and add the dice together. The total is the number of hit points you can distribute to creatures in that sphere. You decide the number of hit points that are restored to each of those creatures, deducting the healing from the total. Or you can do Wild Companion. You can summon a nature spirit that assumes an animal form to aid you as a magic action. You can expend a use of your channel nature and cast the Find Familiar spell. There's what we were talking about. Everything's a spell now, without material components. When you cast a spell in this way, the familiar is a fae, and it disappears when you finish a long rest.
I was wondering about the whole magic action thing, because I know this is jumping ahead a little bit, but there's one thing here where like they can make their wild shape happen as a bonus action, right?
Yeah.
So, a magic action is an action because you're casting a spell. A bonus action doesn't let you cast spells. So you're basically saying the bonus action can let you cast a spell, I guess. The problem with the rules glossary now is that they're basically saying that if it's not listed here, it's the original, it's 5e normal rules. So, they really need to clarify a little bit more. Anyway, sorry.
No, that's fine. So before we press on, we do need to cover how they've completely ruined wild shape, because that's going to come up here in a second. So wild shape used to be you could pick a creature of, I don't remember the exact numbers, I don't have it in front of me, but it's a quarter CR monster or a half CR monster, and they didn't care what kind of creature it was, as long as it was an like a beast. It had to be a beast, and it had to be a certain challenge rating or less, depending upon your level.
And so as you grew in level, you could get bigger ones.
So at fourth level, if I needed to turn into a fish, I could turn into a fish. If I needed to turn into a bat, I could turn into a bat. If I needed to turn into a rat, I could do that. It did not matter the type. If I needed to fly, if I needed to swim, if I needed to blah, 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 that was at my fingertips. Now they have changed it so that you only are able to change into certain ones at certain levels. And you don't even actually change into the animals. You just sort of... I don't even know what the hell to call it anymore. You just sort of gain abilities. You don't actually get the stats of any animal out there. You get stats that are given to you here under the Druid class.
Right. So let's say you were level 4, okay? Yeah. And you were to you were to basically use your nature's your channel nature and turn it in wild shape.
Yeah.
You could wild shape at this point in time at level 4 into an animal of the land.
Yeah, okay? and they do give examples such as a bear, a deer, horse, cat, dog, velociraptor, etc.
So no matter what animal you choose, okay, it's a small, medium, or large terrestrial animal. The creature, your creature type doesn't change. Your armor class is 10 plus your wisdom. Your hit points are your hit points and hit die. And you get a speed of 40 feet. Okay. Your strength and dex equal your wisdom score. And your con, int, wiz, and charisma stay the same. So you replace your strength and your dex with your wisdom when you assume this form.
Yeah, I'm sure that I'm healthier than a freaking polar bear with that constitution. That doesn't even make sense.
So you get dark vision and you keep your languages. Your proficiencies, you gain keen senses, and you have two actions. You have one action, bestial strike. So no matter what beast you chose, it's basically your spell attack modifier, or you roll the d20 plus your spell attack modifier to hit. You do 1d8 plus your wisdom damage, and it's bludgeoning, piercing, or slashing. And that's it. So if you're a wolf, 1d8 plus wisdom. If you're a spider, 1d8 plus wisdom. If you're a bat, 1d8 plus wisdom.
Yep.
If you're a great condor, which you can't be, but let's say you're a penguin, 1d8 plus wisdom. At level 5, you can then start using climb speed if the animal you turn into had a climb speed. So like a spider now gets its climb speed, but your damage still stays the same. It's 1d8 plus whatever, though you do get multi-attack at level 5.
Yeah. One thing that I find funny in this is, because it gives the descriptions, the bear, the deer, the horse, etc. Well, the last one is big rodent. So if I want, I could turn into a groundhog because that's a big rodent. And my movement speed is 40 feet, the same as a horse or a deer.
Yeah, they just kind of messed all that up. So later on, as you level up, I believe it's...
Seventh level is when you get the next one, aquatic form.
Yeah, and then ninth is when you get the aerial forms.
Yeah.
11th is when you get tiny creature. You can become a tiny creature or a tiny creature variant. 13th level, you get alternating forms. It just lets you pop in and out easier.
Yep.
And then 15th is wild resurgence. That's the... transforming into an elements, right?
No, wild resurgence. When you use your wild shape, primal magic radiates from you, allowing you to use healing blossoms as part of the same use of channel nature. So when you shapeshift, you can just heal people.
Yeah. The elemental was the subclass, which we'll get to.
Yeah.
So. And then you get 17th level, you get the chance that you can use spells in it as a beast. When you get to level 18, you basically get a charge back of your channel nature.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people don't like these animals that are land, sea, and sky. Okay. And I understand why they simplified it, because there's a lot of people who are very confused at the table. When they're like, I want to play a beast that turns into a wolf. okay, great. You can be a wolf. Here's your wolf stat block. And then they go, okay, well, I want to be a bear right now. You can't be a bear. It's a CR whatever. You have to kill any CR one half. It's like, okay, well, I want to be this because this is CR one half. What's the stat block for that? I don't have that stat block. You need a stat block if you want to transform into it. Well, give it to me. I don't want to give it to you. It's your job to have your animals prepared.
Yep.
It's not my job. Okay, I wish these would just simplify it. Ugh. And come out here.
And that's exactly why they're simplifying
it. Yeah.
I don't agree with that logic.
The only thing I can think of is if this is the base druid, this weak wild shaping kind of creature. My only thought is that if there's a subclass that lets you now start using the abilities of the animals more. And that may be what happens. Right now, the only subclass they showed off is the Circle of the Moon.
Which I have a lot of complaints on that one, but we'll get to that.
Yeah, it's not Circle of the Moon at all.
No, God, no.
If there is a bestial druid subclass where now it's like, okay, at these levels now at 3rd and 6th, 10th and 14th, you're a spider. Not only do you get spider climb, but you get the poison thing, you get the webbing thing from it. Like you're a druid that focuses on turning into these animals and using them to their fullest extent. You're not just some normal druid who can just turn into a thing that looks like a thing. Mm-hmm. You're actually turning it into it. This druid here feels like the World of Warcraft druid.
Oh, yeah.
You're just turning into a bear. I'm a bear now. Yeah. Rawr. I'm a kitty.
I need to be a cat. I need to run fast and do critical strikes. Yeah. I'm a moonkin. Wait, that's not in here.
So I'm thinking this is just weak. It doesn't scream druid to me. I don't get nature caster out of this.
I would never play this. This seems just
boring. Gets spells. He does get spells. One thing I noticed too is they actually gave him a set of already prepared spells.
They're doing that with all of them now, which I'm fine with that because they did say, because we covered it last time, that you can start with these or you can choose your spells.
What they really need to do is they really honestly still need to just go and say, hey, you're a cleric. You're the heal bot of the party, unfortunately. Sorry, that's never going to change. You get cure wounds, period. It doesn't count towards your spell list or your spell number. You just get it.
Yeah.
Now pick some other ones. So I'm tired of having to pick the same spells over and over again, no matter what class I'm playing. If I'm playing that role, if I'm playing a healer and I'm picking a cleric to be a healer, I get to waste all my spells on just the bare essential healing stuff. Let me have some fun and pick some other spells. Maybe I can actually do something other than just heal people when they fall down.
It's boring. It's contrived. At least this druid is, there's no creativity in this. This is just let's just make it so stupidly easy for everybody that people who don't understand this game will still play it.
Yeah.
For brand new players, that's fine. But for people who have been in this game as long as I have, or you have, it's just garbage.
And that may be the problem with this is they're approaching this perspective of pulling in new players. When 5th edition's been out for 10 years, the new player stuff, your starter kits, do a really good job already of selling new players and getting them roped into the game without, dumping a bunch of data on them. The problem here is not the rules. The problem is your other accessories that you have for people to buy need to be better to introduce people at a better stage. The last starter kit did a really good job of here are the five characters you can pick. Pick one of these. Now they're shitty builds of those characters. We need to stop doing that for Christ's sake. But that is a good introduction to playing the game, And then you tailor the experience around using each of those classes in some way, shape, or form so people feel like they're doing stuff. And then let them, through their excitement, go discover more stuff. Don't baby the rogue down and make him just stupidly dumb and idiotic to play. Like any moron can just pick it up and play it because you want to achieve that fantasy and so everyone can understand how to play a rogue. No, tailor the starting experience for the starter players and then leave the rogue as complicated as it currently is so people can learn that character better and move forward with playing a better rogue in the future.
They need, and I know we've talked about it, but there needs to be, I think there needs to be three things. There needs to be a starter version of D&D. And not necessarily, you know, they all work the same, but just an intro for brand new players who've never done tabletop games. And what they're releasing here is fine for that. Then you need the standard game, which is kind of where it's at right now. And then they need to release advanced books. And these advanced books will take what is already there. You know, we have the advanced 5e level up stuff. Those don't necessarily work perfectly with the base 5e. So like WotC themselves could release an advanced version that will have way more options for people to pick from to, you know, create their characters once they have a lot more experience in the game.
Yeah. All right, moving on to the Druid subclass, the Circle of the Moon.
Oh man. Okay, you
now,
read
the class description of Circle of the Moon first.
I will. Before I do that, tell me what the Circle of the Moon was in 5e, because I don't have it pulled up.
Okay, give me a second.
Sure.
Okay. Circle of the Moon, Druids of the Circle of the Moon are fierce guardians of the wilds. Their order gathers under the full moon to share news and trade warnings. They haunt the deepest parts of the wilderness, where they might go for weeks on end before crossing paths with another humanoid creature, let alone another druid. Changeable as a moon, a druid of the circle might prowl as a great cat one night, soar over the treetops as an eagle the next day, and crash through the undergrowth in bear form to drive off a trespassing monster. The wild is the druid's blood.
So you pretty much just read the 6e version of it, verbatim.
Okay. So they have a combat wild shape, which lets them use wild shape on their turn as a bonus action rather than an action. And when it's a transformed wild shape, they can use a bonus action to expand one spell slot to regain 1d8 hit points per level of the spell slot, hit points per level of the spell slot expended. They get circle forms. The rites of your circle grant you the ability to transform into more dangerous animal form starting at second level. You can use your wild shape to transform into a beast with a challenge rating as high as 1. Starting at 6th level, you can transform into a beast with a challenge rating as high as your druid level divided by 3, rounded down. Primal Sight. Starting at 6th level, your attacks in beast form count as magical for the purpose of overcoming resistances and immunity to non-magical attacks and damage. Circle forms. The rites of your circle guarantee the ability to transform into more dangerous animal forms. Starting at 6th level, you can transform into a beast with a challenge rating as high as your druid level divided by 3, rounded down. Elemental wild shape at 10th level, you can expend 2 uses of wild shape at the same time to transform into an air elemental, earth elemental, fire elemental, or water elemental. And 1,000 forms. At 14th level, you have learned to use magic to alter your physical form in a more subtle way, and you can cast Alter Self spell at will.
Okay, so it diverges wildly pretty much from the get-go. The new version of it still has the swift transformation where you can wild shape as a bonus action. But you at third level on here, you get combat wild shape, which gives you swift transformation. It also gives you abjuration spells. While you're in a wild shape form, you can cast any spell you currently have prepared from the abjuration school, provided it doesn't require a material component. And it gives you quick attack. You can use unarmed strike as a bonus action. So this is still the shape-shifting version of druids. They didn't really change that. But at 6th level, where you could just change into different forms, you know, having a larger pool, this one just kind of makes you go into elemental form. Channeling ancient lunar magic, you imbue your wild-shaped forms with power from the elemental planes. Whenever you assume a wild shape form, choose one of the following damage types. acid, cold, fire, lightning, or thunder. While in that form, you have resistance to that type, and your bestial strike can deal damage of that type rather than its normal type. Your form also displays signs of the chosen damage type. For example, if you choose fire, your fur and wild shape might flicker with harmless flames. At 10th level, you get elemental strike. Elemental forces imbue your attacks. When you deal damage with your bestial strike, the target takes an extra 1d6 damage of the type you choose from elemental wild shape. It increases again at 17th level to 2d6. At 14th level, you still get the 1000 forms where you get alter self, which honestly is really freaking weak.
So honestly, elemental shape, elemental wild shape made sense in 5e Circle of the Moon, because you're basically, this is how you're interacting with the land, and you're becoming an actual elemental from the land.
Yes.
This elemental wild shape and elemental strike should also be its own subclass, the elemental druid, or circle of the element, elements, and move that shit over to there. Because you're not transforming into anything more or better with Circle of the Moon anymore.
Yeah, you're still whatever shitty creature you were. You're just doing lightning damage now.
Woohoo!
Yeah, it's weak. It's once again not creative. They put no thought at all into this class.
I'm sure they thought a lot about what to remove.
Yeah, they because of them making it where you only can shapeshift into three creatures, and those are the stats you get, they're just adding this on top of it, so they don't have, you don't have access to new creatures. You just get these stats to go with those stats. It's boring.
Yeah, no, the best part is, I think Tasha's did it better anyways.
Yeah, Tasha's definitely did. Tasha's was a really good book.
All right, the druid sucks. I know that's the feedback they're going to get. What about the paladin?
Did they change anything on the paladin?
They changed a little bit.
I didn't sit there with side-by-side comparisons, but I know there's a little bit, but most of it just seems the same.
This paladin is much more of a fighter than a in-between kind of tank. So, let me get to...
Like, you still comparison. get lay on hands, you get Divine Smite that works the same way.
So, does it?
Once again, I didn't do a side-by-side comparison, but reading it, I didn't notice anything.
So a lot of people are bringing up with how attacks, melee attacks work in 6th edition, when you make a melee attack roll on a crit, only the damage from the weapon doubles.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, that would be a big difference then.
Yeah. So, I mean, other than that clarification needed for that, I'm assuming Divine Smite's going to stay the same where everything doubles. But what you get is throughout the base clash, all your attacks do extra radiant damage. Like at level 11, you get radiant strikes where you just deal more radiant damage whenever you hit somebody. Now that's kind of new.
And that's what I was going to say. That's the first place where I noticed something really different.
They actually gave them at level 5 a Faithful Steed. They actually can get Fine Steed just by default, which is something that's not in the basic Paladin.
Yeah, but you are always able to cast the spell if I recall right. It's a low-level spell.
It is a low-level spell, but it's the problem I mentioned earlier where, like, oh, I'm this class. Why don't I have these spells always prepare for me by default?
Sure.
In this case, right here, Paladin and his magical Faithful Steed, there's a class feature that's existed forever, and it's not in 5th edition, but it is here in 6th. That's a really good change, in my opinion.
I've never liked the Faithful Steed thing, though. I understand.
Well, you don't like Paladins.
No, I like Paladins. I do. But I kind of grew up earlier editions where you actually would just summon a steed, and you would call out basically Fine Steed. It would take maybe a week or a day or whatever for it to show up, but that is your lifelong friend at that point. You have found this mount. This is not a summoned spell creature.
Yeah.
Like it matters.
I wish it was more like that, and that kind of goes to the other point where they replace the ability with a spell.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, the subclass, the Paladin is just... you stand there, you give hits, but throughout all your hits and stuff, you do more radiant damage, and then you have your auras. Yeah. And then your auras get bigger.
Yeah, the Abjure Foes was a new channel divinity that could effectively cause targets to get dazed and frightened at ninth level. You do get your aura, like you're talking about, seventh level aura protection. That didn't seem to change. I noticed at 13th, you get Aura of Courage, which makes you immune to frightened.
Yeah. And those are all from the previous one, too.
Yeah. Restoring Touch, I don't remember that one. When you lay on hands on a creature, you can also remove one or more of the following conditions: blind, charm, dazed, deafened, frightened, paralyzed, or stunned. I recall it if I'm remembering right, but I think it was at a different level and might have had some slightly other effects.
Yeah, but I didn't see very many differences, but the paladin here is very similar to the fifth edition one. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit more focused on buffing your party. It feels that way, at least, even though it kind of reads exactly the same. So I don't know why it feels that way, but maybe it's just because of how everything's laid out.
Yeah.
It feels more paladin to me.
Like a paladin, it still seems like the paladin is going to be a very consistent class, hard to kill, very consistent damage. The change in crits will make it where they're not, massive crit machines with Divine Smite, because that was always the thing. You just Divine Smite when you crit on a boss and deal, 60 damage or whatever, and that
will I'm fine with that.
I don't think paladins ever should have been able to do that.
It makes sense to me, because like paladins are like, okay, I'm calling upon my deity for like this one hit to hopefully happen and be a crit, and the god's wrath hits them super hard and they die.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with it. It feels, as long as the player is kind of like playing it upright, you're kind of just, you're crit fishing. I don't know if there should be any more support for crit fishing for the paladin, but hey, I crit, use Divine Smite, move on. If that's the only thing you're doing with the paladin, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
But being able to smite whenever you need to get that little extra push on that enemy, just, it feels very paladin-y to me.
I don't have a problem with the smite. I just always hated the 60, 70 damage smites. Those were kind of ridiculous, but
it can happen.
Yeah. The Oath of Devotion is the subclass that they released, and I'm gonna be honest, I didn't read it. So
it's pretty much the same.
You get Sacred Weapon as a bonus action. You can expend one use of your channel divinity to imbue one simple or martial weapon for up to a minute. You add your charisma modifier to attack rolls you make with that weapon. It also emits bright light in 20 feet and dim in 20 feet after that. Smite of Protection. Your Divine Smite now radiates protective energy that allows you and your allies to stay in the fight. Whenever you use your Divine Smite, choose yourself or an ally within 30 feet of yourself. Chosen creature gains temporary hit points equal to 1d8 plus the level of the spell slot used for the Divine Smite.
That's new, but I like it.
Yeah, I don't hate it. Aura of Devotion at 10th level. You and your allies are immune to the charmed condition while inside your aura of protection. If a charmed ally enters the area, that condition is suppressed while they are there. I'm pretty sure that's new. At 14th level is Holy Nimbus. As a bonus action, you can imbue your aura of protection with holy power. The aura gains the following benefits for 1 minute or until you end them as a bonus action. Radiant damage.
Which is not a Nimbus.
No, it is not.
There's no cloud. You're not summoning any clouds. What the hell?
Whenever an enemy starts its turn in the aura, that creature takes radiant damage equal to your proficiency bonus plus your charisma modifier. And Sunlight. The aura is filled with bright light that is sunlight. That could be useful against vampires. So yeah, that seems a little different, but honestly, it's fine. I don't hate any of it.
It feels a little tighter, more you know, kind of focusing on divine smiting, doing other things as well, which is, yeah, I think the right route that they should go.
Yeah. Now, so, once again, I have not compared it to the current Oath of Devotion.
It's pretty much the same.
Okay. Well, that's good. Was there anything else in this PDF that you wanted to go over?
The change log for the rules glossary, kind of like they took away inspiration on a 20. They're now calling it heroic advantage.
I saw that. No, it's inspiration, bro. Everyone calls it that. Leave it the fuck alone.
They clarified some stuff. They said that they move thing, climbing and swimming under move, but it's not there. So you can't climb or swim in 6th edition right now. You can't dash anymore. You can't jump anymore.
I love the revised entry for difficult terrain.
Yeah.
You
want to read it?
Yeah. Your allies are no longer difficult terrain for you. And furniture is difficult terrain if it's one size smaller than you or larger. I love that they actually include fucking furniture as difficult terrain.
So in fourth edition, on all the maps, like if you pull out a battle map and you want to know if it's from fourth edition or fifth edition, if it has like these little triangles on it, it's from fourth edition because that means that square is difficult terrain.
Okay.
And sometimes it made sense, and sometimes it made no sense at all. Like furniture, there were never any triangles on the furniture. But if there were, most of your maps would be covered in little triangles because all furniture would be difficult terrain. So I find it kind of weird now that they say that furniture is difficult terrain. It makes sense.
People walk around
it all the time. But
my guess is that they just had so many DMs over 5th edition asking, hey man, does furniture count as difficult terrain? All my players say it doesn't. I think it does. And they probably got so damn tired of it that they finally included it in here.
Probably.
Once again, here's your rules for everything because you can't figure it out on your own.
So, can I jump over the couch? Is it in my way?
Well, it just cost you twice as much movement. That's all.
That's one extra foot per foot of movement in a square.
Yep. Yeah, technically. Effectively doubling your movement cost. I've never had that question come up in my entire life.
No, neither have I. They've always walked around the furniture.
Yeah.
And then someone will go, I'm going to jump over this piece of furniture. All right.
Make a dex check. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see if you fall over.
Yeah, I'd put the DC very, very low unless it was, you know, a real reason for it not to be.
Are you telling me that furniture parkour is not a core component of your games at home, Jay?
Oh, it absolutely is.
I definitely think we need a paragraph or two more about furniture parkour.
Yeah.
How exactly can I do the whole, like, Captain Jack Sparrow jump onto the chair and like surfboard it down to the ground and do a combat roll behind my enemy? Do I get sneak attack damage then because I did something awesome off a chair?
So in the process of all of that, you have to make sure that you swing from a cut chandelier rope while grabbing a bagel and flying out a window.
Okay.
That's very important if you're going to play the Jack Sparrow method of things.
Furniture parkour. That should be the next game that gets designed. Furniture parkour.
Actually, can I just take a feat? Can I have a feat in D&D that's called furniture parkour? That's all I'm asking.
Sure. You can. I'll write one up for you.
Okay. Awesome. So the next character I play in any of your games, I want that feat.
All right. You got to expend a feat though to get it though. But
that's fine. I will expend a feat. You write it up, you tell me what it does, and I'll make sure that I take it.
All right, sounds good.
Oh my god. I'm so glad we're done with this one. Not the podcast, but the Dean Dunn thing. Yeah, this was a rough one. Fucking druids.
We're also done with the podcast. It's been an hour.
Oh, all right. Well, I was going to talk about Dune briefly.
Go ahead and talk about Dune briefly. Is it more entertaining than Furniture Parkour? Because it better be.
Oh, I don't know that anything's more entertaining than furniture parkour.
All right.
You know, I think I'm going to get off here and I'm going to go find a video game where I just parkour over furniture for the next hour. I like this plan. All right. Bye, Craig.
Bye, Craig.
Bye, Chris.